Tony doesn't know, but tonight's word of the night is euphoric. Let's see how far into the show it takes until Tony says, Dave and Paul, why the fuck do you keep saying euphoric all over tonight? All right, have fun. Bye.
You don't teach a monkey how to do taekwondo. You don't teach him how to press the big red button. And you don't teach him how to shoot a machine gun.
Settle down. We'll start the show.
Welcome to Music to Swear By. This is the podcast where I, Tony, invite neighbors to the fort to listen to music containing profanity. It's fucking cold, but in the fort tonight we have neighbor Paul. Neighbor Paul, say hi.
Hello.
And neighbor Dave. Neighbor Dave, say hi.
What?
And once again, special guest in the studio, we have our friend from Uzbekistan, Borat. Borat, dude, what's up? How you doing?
I okay.
I know it's tight with four grown men, but what do you think? What do you think of the fort, dude?
It is nice.
Yeah, it is. It is nice. I mean, it's not
tight, like a man's anus.
I got nothing. All right, Borat, move over to the corner and shut the fuck up. All right, Borat?
I imagine you with no clothes.
Jesus Christ. Whoa.
All right, Borat, yeah, thank you for that. I really wouldn't know. But Borat, go sit in the fucking corner for a little while, all right?
Whoa.
What, anybody know what the temperature is outside right now?
It is 41 Bismarcky degrees.
10:30 p.m.
That's inside, not outside.
It's inside. Inside the fort, it's 41 degrees.
Inside the fort, it's 41 degrees. Today, our high was 2 above 0.
Driving to work this morning, it was minus 21.
Right. I did not expect to be in the fort tonight.
Minus 21, my car thermometer thing read. When I came out to the fort about 8 o'clock tonight to turn the fucking heater on, the temperature was 1 Bismarcky degree.
I'd love it.
Or 1 degree Bismarck, however we say it, and it's 41 now.
Nice.
So, but that's why I got all these Dickies on and shit like that.
Right. No, but you have to say, it's 41 inside the fort with three large warm bodies. And I'll attest, you guys are warm bodies. Yeah. That's why I invite you.
And I'm large, you know that.
And we have a space heater going, and it's still, it's not miserable out here, but it's cold enough, all right? So don't, if anybody has to pee, just stay in the fort.
You can still see a little bit of your breath.
So I was in Vegas a bunch of years ago.
Yeah.
And a guy turns to me at the blackjack table.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota, huh? I'd never live anywhere where shit just spontaneously combusts in your garage because it gets so cold.
What?
Well, that's what he said.
Does that happen?
Well, things can freeze. Like, he put a can of pop in the freezer. You know, ice will expand and it will blow up. But stuff doesn't happen in your garage.
Did you see clarification on this topic?
No, I just told him that. I just told him shit like that doesn't happen.
Was he feeling euphoric?
I don't know.
Was he drunk?
I think he might have been, but it's a $5 table. Nobody feels euphoric, even if you're on fucking like ecstasy, man. You're not feeling euphoric at a $5 table. You're a cheap piece of shit.
Wow.
All right. You guys, what do you guys want?
I love the feeling when I get euphoric, don't you?
I do too. Jesus. Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
All right. What do you guys want to talk about?
Besides being euphoric, I want to talk about music with profanity.
All right. Yes. Tonight we're going to mimic what we did last week. We are going to do music containing profanity. We're going to go for a full 6 songs. Correct?
You ever thought about having a whole show dedicated to that topic? Like every podcast we talk about music that swears in it.
Are you fucking with me?
I'm feeling euphoric.
Quit fucking with me.
All right.
All right. But first, before we get into the music, I want to talk about what has kept me occupied all week.
Can you hold on a second? My left ear doesn't hear very well, and I have to reach into my satchel and pull out another brewski.
Well, as long as you're pulling out another brewski, what's tonight's podcast not sponsored by?
Tonight's podcast is not sponsored by Tasty Labatt Blue Imported. Comes in a wonderful blue can.
12-ounce can.
Cheap as shit. Tastes like shit. My son thinks it's soda.
Excellent. This podcast not sponsored by Labatt Blue Beer.
I have a joke. There is a chair. The chair walk with the shoes. La 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 la. You walk on the street. He's walking.
Okay. Thank you, Borat, for the color commentary on Elena. Okay, high five.
High five.
we need to play a song.
Yeah, we got to get on here, man. Oh. We haven't played a single fucking song,
right,
man.
We still got like 40 minutes to go.
I think we've said euphoric probably 7 or 8 times at this point. Haven't even gotten a funny look from Tony yet. We'll keep trying.
Yes, music.
Music.
I'm on my second leftover Bloody Mary from last weekend.
What's your song?
All right, I had this sort of corresponds. This sort of corresponds with current events. There's a guy named Alex Kirst. He's a drummer. Apparently, he was a drummer for a very good band called the. Fuck if I know.
I've never heard of the Fucks if I know.
Fucks if okay. I know.
Alex Kirst was a very famous drummer for a band. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Hey, Tony, we got a show.
This is what happens
involves playing songs.
Tony, that sounds euphoric.
You got a song. You are definitely euphoric.
All right. Alex Kirst.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy who played drums for many years. Yeah. Most notably, he played for a band called The Nymphs, who were critically acclaimed, mm-hmm. but a commercial disaster. You know how that goes, right?
Yep,
right.
Yep,
all through
yep,
the 90s.
Yep, yep.
Was
yep,
pursued
yep,
all through
you,
the...
Yep, uh-huh, yep, yep. Yep.
Don't fuck with me, Paul.
I'm not.
Okay,
I'm
we
just,
got you. We got you. Go
I'm
ahead. Go ahead.
I'm euphoric. Tell it. Come
listen,
on. Come
I'm
on.
Getting,
Let's go,
I'm...
Tony. Hey, Tony. Tell me your fucking song I'm gonna play tonight. What the fuck's the song? Come on.
Do we talk about the songs or
what,
do
you
fucking
need?
Shut up?
I don't shut up ever.
All right.
I talk in my sleep.
So Alex Kirst played with this band all through the 90s and was pursued through the late 90s by Iggy Pop.
Ooh.
Listen, play with my band. I'm putting together a band. Play with my band. To which Alex says...
So you said, or that's your interpretation of what he thinks? He... Okay.
You're not being funny. Shut up.
See, that's funny.
All right.
All right,
try it again.
I'm just euphoric.
Iggy, all right. Do I start over? What? Come on. You break
I
it up 10
probably,
times.
I couldn't pass
over.
A quiz on what you're
God
talking about.
You should start over.
All right. Fuck off. You guys go first. Fuck off.
So, hey... I got an idea. You
no,
got
I'm all agitated now, you dicks.
You got an Iggy Pop song?
I try to string together 3 coherent sentences, and you guys fuck with me.
Wait a minute. I got a song.
Yeah?
See, now this can't not make the podcast.
I'm euphoric. It's amazing.
Okay, Tony, since you're so incapacitated, I got a song. It's from a band called Butt Trumpet.
Butt Trumpet.
The song is I've Been So Mad Lately.
Cue it up. Look at the fucking highest rated comments on YouTube. I highly recommend this to Disney Channel. Then kids wouldn't spend 15 years learning these words. It would speed up this progress.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you!
Wow!
Yeah!
First album was called Dictatorship.
I guarantee, before I even look, this came out in 1994 or 5, right?
1994, it's called the
yep,
album
I never
called,
knew it.
The album is called Primitive Enema. And this album was nearly banned from sale in Massachusetts.
What the
yeah.
hell?
Prudes.
After one mother heard a 12-year-old daughter listening to Primitive Enema.
I was gonna say.
She called it audio porn. Okay, so this band split right after this album was released.
And they regrouped, though.
Most of the members regrouped as a band called Betty Blowtorch.
Betty Blowtorch. All right, so what do we got? Butt Trumpet. Okay, I admit Betty Blowtorch is a way better name.
Yes, than Butt Trumpet.
Betty Blowtorch and the Butt Trumpets, formerly of the Butt Trumpets. Wow, I you know, that's a contender for the Ultimate Profanity Showdown. I think that one comes back in a month or so, huh?
I like it.
Not
like
bad. It.
Very nice. All right, can I talk about this guy who died?
Yes, I will drink beer the entire time while
I'm going. All right, yeah, stick that bottle in your mouth. All right, tickle it.
All right, I have a bottle officially up there right now. It's not Dane's cock, it's your bottle.
Alex Kirsch, they found him dead on the side of the road last week.
Last week?
Last week.
Okay.
All right, so Alex was a drummer. He played with a band called The Nymphs, which was critically acclaimed through the 90s, but never commercially successful. He was pursued by Iggy Pop to be in his band through the late 90s, to which he said, "Fuck you, Iggy Pop, I'm already in a band that I like very much." So this guy is a drummer. But okay, long story short, so he ends up playing in Iggy Pop's band, The Trolls. This is the first album that Iggy Pop played with his custom-made band called The Trolls. All right, so this is Iggy Pop and The Trolls with Drink New Blood.
Give it up!
Raging against the machine.
We got no dicks. We need some bucks.
No, get down to the...
What part?
He talks about, like, the corporate machine finding new blood to sell music to.
Is that on another page? A vampire metaphor to rag on the music industry executives.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, let's cut it, Dave.
We got no dicks. We need some bucks. So we need to drink some blood. So he thinks that the suits and ties don't have dicks, thinks they're fuckers, and they need to drink new blood, new musicians that people think are cool so they can get boners again and make more money.
They have to figure out who to go market to.
All right.
And that song is... it's okay.
Yeah, but...
And I mean, it's Iggy can never sing a song the same twice. I mean, he goes into the studio, who the fuck knows how it's going to turn out.
Right.
You can tell he's like, improvising rhythm there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, however it pops out of his head that afternoon, that's how it's going to be. That's how all Iggy's shit is, and that's why...
Fine with me.
That's why it's
never very good.
I have to
Come
say...
Come on, let's admit it.
But he made the Hall of Fame for being very good.
Stuff is never very good.
But he made the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for being very good, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's like Burt Blyleven.
He made it for being, like, okay for a really long time.
And being consistent and true, and I guess...
And being outrageous in a character.
There you go, yeah.
His music has never been
great.
Burt
Blyleven was.
All right, so anyway, so his drummer, Alex, they find him dead on the side of the road, hit-and-run victim.
Fuck.
Sixth person in 6 weeks to be found dead on the side of the road.
Wow.
On that highway.
Wow.
Weird
really?
Is that? Yeah.
No wow.
Six in as many weeks.
Oh, thank you.
All right, Alex.
And where was this? Florida? It's probably Florida. It's either Florida or Germany.
Florida or Germany, you said?
Any kind of crazy story you ever hear on the news, it's either from Florida or Germany.
Yeah, that's a Corolla thing, but it's true,
yes,
man.
It is a Corolla
like,
thing.
Yeah,
yep,
yeah.
Yep.
No, this was in Cathedral City. It was near Palm Springs, California.
I think
we fucking talked Iggy out. I'm done with Iggy's dead drummer, Alex. Hey, everybody, raise your glass to Alex.
Alex,
we're
way
sorry.
To go.
Sorry you got hit on the road, dude.
Sorry to hear about that.
Apparently the guy was underrated, never fucking whatever.
And Iggy, if you need a new bassist, Tony is unemployed at the moment.
Yeah. All right. Do you guys want to talk about Jaco Pastorius? Remember from last week's podcast? The fucking most famous bass player of all time and probably the ugliest bass player of all time?
Still not interested.
Sure.
Have you listened to him?
Yeah.
And do you like him?
No.
Still not interested. Sorry.
All right.
Yeah. Rather listen to Les Claypool.
Ooh. Okay. Where are we going next then?
Paul, do you got a song?
I got a song, yeah. I this week was, I was cleaning my basement, thumbing through a lot of the CDs. I had hundreds of CDs in my basement, and I got to burn them to MP3 one of these days, and I stumbled upon Living Color. And I haven't listened to Living Color 5, 6, 7, 8 years or so. And in 1987, 88, I think it was 1988, their first album, Vivid, came out.
That was a great album.
That was
for
fantastic.
Me. I listened to it a lot.
And it's
that the one with Cult of Personality?
You got it. Yes. Living Color came out. You know, for me, I'm 41 years old. This shit was big deal to me in 1988. It was high school, senior year, freshman year, college, and Guns N' Roses hadn't hit the radar yet.
That's
so to
right.
me,
yeah.
Cult of Personality and Living Color was the hardest shit, contemporary shit, I could get my hands on, short of like Dead Kennedys and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I was totally into it. And as I think I've said in this podcast, I love the Rolling Stones. And I saw the Rolling Stones, you know, a couple times in 1988. And Living Color opened for them. And getting that album Vivid.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
That's a good concert.
Yes.
And where did you see it?
Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Wow.
So
at the old Patriot Stadium?
Yeah, the old Patriot Stadium, exactly.
Old, and like metal cold seats?
Yes, yes. Yep. Like it was like October, November concert. And it was, you know, like 30 degrees and we're all bundled up and shit. And you're trying to, we snuck in, you know, some vodka and schnapps and shit like that. And it was a couple of the Tryons and all. It was like 8 or 10 of us all got together. And the cool thing is we'd been listening to Living Color. So we knew during tailgating, don't fuck around. Get inside to listen to this band. This mm-hmm. shit is good. And I want to play one of the songs in a moment here called Which Way to America.
Okay, but I just got to say that mm-hmm. sucks. Because when I saw mm-hmm. the Rolling Stones, you know who the opening band was?
Dave Matt. I don't know.
It was Seal. That's awful. Fucking horrible.
Dude, how rock and roll is that shit, man?
And it was in the Oakland Coliseum.
Wait, so who was it? Who opening for who?
Opening for the Rolling Stones was Seal.
That's awful.
It was horrible. It was like the worst band
when
ever.
When you Wikipedia.
You want to argue who's the greatest rock and roll band of all
shut
time?
Shut the fuck up. Listen to this. If you Wikipedia the 1988 Rolling Stones World Tour, you'll see the two bands that opened for them. I didn't know Seal ever did. The two bands that opened them on tour, not at the same time, but I think whatever the fuck the schedule was, were Living Color and a band you heard of called Guns N' Roses.
Okay, wow.
So they knew what the fuck they were
Guns
doing.
Guns N' Roses opened
Guns
for
N' Roses
Stones?
Opened
wow.
for the Stones. Wow. So, the Stones right, so shut
that,
the fuck
now,
up.
That here's, would be
here's,
a great
here's a little here's a little shovel. I'm going to scoop some credibility back over onto the Rolling Stones side.
And to segue into this Living Color thing, and just because I want to make sure we get to the song here pretty quickly, the short story of it is Vernon Reid, the guitarist of Living Color, had started a group called the Black Rock Coalition in the New York City area in like 1984, 85. And he was trying to get, at the time, he was trying to get black rock musicians, not rappers, rock and roll musicians, guys and gals that aspired to actually make a career doing rock and roll music. And he felt at the time, everything I've read, he felt that the industry only wanted white rockers.
Right, because, and just in case anybody doesn't know, Living Color, all black rock musicians.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. That's kind of important to the story.
Even
thank
Jimmy
you.
Had white guys in his band, but
yes,
not
yeah.
Living Color.
So Vernon Reid started this coalition where he'd get a lot of support, you know, amongst his own peers and everything, and they'd lobby and they'd try to get, you know, attention, these black rock and rollers. Anyway, Living Color was playing the clubs in New York City in the mid-1980s, and this guy you might have heard of called Mick Jagger went into a couple of the clubs one night.
Who?
Yeah, this obscure lead singer from some blues rock band.
Whatever, he sounds like whatever. A douchebag.
You can always spot him because he's always wearing Rolling Stone t-shirts.
Oh, yeah, wait, yeah. That's the guy with the fucking swimming pool for a mouth, right?
Right. It looks like a monkey, right?
Get to the point.
Fucking Mick Jagger spotted them and he was blown away by them.
Cool.
They eventually got signed and he produced a couple of the songs. Their first album, Vivid, came out in 1988. And one of the songs that he produced with them. And then what he produced, I don't know exactly what that means. Is he said, here's the sound you should have, or this is what I read is this is one of the songs they were playing in the clubs, and people went mental when they played this in the clubs, and he just helped them make this fucking song onto the first album. So I want to play Which Way to America by Living Color.
Produced by Mick Jagger?
Produced by Mick Jagger.
Cue it up.
Yes,
he is. Yes,
and
he is.
I don't think he ever... Tony Card, he said hell earlier in the song.
Hell?
To our listeners, I understand hell is probably not really a swear, but I'm playing the Tony Card here and going on a one-show probation because this song is so fucking good and this band's so fucking important. I want people to know about them.
Fucking euphoric!
Do you feel euphoric listening to this?
You're euphoric? Yeah!
I'm euphoric, yeah!
I'm effervescent.
Right there, yep. Paul, you pointed out to me very clearly he's fucking screaming his balls off and going a little mental.
Yeah,
so the one thing with Living Color is they cross genres a little bit.
Yes, they do
a little bit,
but it's not like the genre hopping you think it is. It is simply a mix of funk and rock.
They're just doing what they're well versed, and they're doing what feels good to them,
right?
So I also saw Living Color.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sure it was on this fucking, what is it, the Vivid Tour?
Where'd you see him?
At first, I saw him at First Avenue. They headlined it, and we got comps to the show, and we're like, oh, man, not this super awesome radio band. I mean, I know they're good and shit.
Because of Cult of Personality. And
so, right. Cult of Personality was out already when you saw him?
Yeah. Yep. So, no, Andy Brilli and I go to the show. We wait it out. We have drinks. It's fun, whatever. And they start playing, and I'm like, holy
fuck, these guys rock the balls off the balls. And by the end of the night, Corey Glover had fucking climbed a stack of amps with a remote microphone,
Holy shit.
A stack of amps that was fucking piled up. And I don't know, you guys know First Avenue.
Yeah.
There's a second level that you can only accessible by stairs.
Shit.
Leaped off the amps, grabbed a hold of the railing on the second level, and then catapulted himself up onto the second level.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, man, mental. Because he was this close to falling on his head. So I, even though I don't listen to any of their music, it's not in my collection, you got to acknowledge that what Vernon Reid is one of the top 20 of all-time guitar players, and Corey Glover is completely mental.
Right.
And contrary to popular belief, I just doodled the shit out of this, is not the son of
Danny Glover.
Ah, okay.
Okay. All right.
So the only issue I have with Living Color is they had this album Vivid.
Yep.
It was a great fucking album. That was a great album.
Right.
But what do they follow it up with?
Where do they go from there? I don't know.
That was it. They were one fucking hit wonder. Okay, so they did Time's Up. That was the second album.
Okay, Vivid, Time's Up.
Time's Up.
Paul, Google that shit.
And Time's Up was... It was an okay album, but it was nowhere near the level of Vivid.
Really?
Right. Nowhere near.
Maybe Mick Jagger wasn't involved. I don't know.
They had, there was one good song where Love Rears its Ugly Head.
Yep, that was
on
good.
Time's Up.
And then they released Stain in 1993.
Stain, that's the one. Yep. They released this album called Stain, and it was much harder than everything they've done.
Okay, was it
but
good?
I could not say it was good.
Really?
It was hard to sit and listen to it.
Is that in your fucking 8 million gigabyte music collection?
It might be. I'll look right now.
I'm going to have to go check that out.
So what
no, please don't, for the benefit of the podcast listeners.
Well, what we haven't done...
go ahead, Paul. Sorry.
Something happened, right? So the first album, Vivid, that we just played that song from was fabulous. And then Time's Up, the buzz was there. This is a fabulous American rock and roll band. No one fucking cared.
It fell flat on its face.
I don't know if it did that. I mean, it probably sold pretty well. It went gold in the U.S. I mean, people loved it, right?
Time Rears Its Ugly Head was that was a big MTV hit. It was
big. But 3 years later, in 1993, they released Stain. And believe it or not, in 2003, they released an album called Kaleidoscope with a C starting it. And in 2009... they released their fifth studio album called
2009,
really?
Called The Chair in the Doorway, and I've never even heard the album.
So there's two albums that I've not heard.
So something's happened where they were so fucking amazing, and they influenced my teenage and early 20s years, and I love them, and I'm talking about them now, whatever it is, 20-something years later, but I haven't even listened to their last two albums.
Yes, yeah, Stain is on the collection.
So they're not penetrating suburban America. I mean, look where we fucking live
historically now. Historically, they're relevant, but contemporarily, they're irrelevant. And awesome. I don't know why.
You know, let's call it mildly successful for fucking ever. Is there anything wrong with mildly successful forever?
If I made an album like Vivid and it lasted on Rolling Stone's top 500 albums list or something like that forever, fucking A.
Who cares?
Well, you know, one of the things I always talk about is the hardest rocking album ever.
Yeah.
And I think it's Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
Okay. Vivid is in that list.
This would be on the this would be on the top 100 list for me.
Even with that dank.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple.
Yes, because I like funk.
I want to.
And so rock and funk for me is like a good mix.
I want to fess up. I want to fess up for the little bit of integrity that I have on this show. That Mick Jagger produced two of the songs on the album. That one, which I think is fabulous. Another one called Glamour Boys, which I think is the gayest song on the album.
Glamour Boys. Yes. That sinks the album.
That sucks.
Without that song on the album, it's one of the greatest.
But I think it was an MTV hit and all
it's
that shit.
It's Under the Fucking Bridge by the...
It is.
By the Chili Peppers.
It's
the equivalent of the fucking I Will Never Listen to Them Again album.
Yes.
And I bet it was Mick Jagger scratching his chin thinking, rock or are they just, you know, sexy,
have you heard Glamour Boys?
No. Cue up some... Turn the fucking heater up. Paul,
all
I'm
right.
dying
fucking,
here.
My toes are fucking freezing.
Right, my nose is running.
That's why we drink.
Glamour Boys.
I've heard this song.
The gayest song ever.
Awful.
It's so out of place, too.
It is. Because the album, there's five or six other songs with really hard rocking guitar riffs and all that, and screaming lyrics.
The Glamour
this,
Boys.
Turn it off. We can't play this. There's no profanity. It's a gong. Okay, so Vivid, short of being short of Glamour Boys, is one of the must-own albums of all times.
Yeah, and so is that Red Hot Chili Peppers album, short of Under the Bridge.
Yes, I think any listener, if you're skeptical, download the album from Amazon or iTunes. If it sucks, I won't reimburse you your $10 or so. It's that good.
It is really good.
Awesome. I'm just going to score it off Dave's 600 million gigabyte music collection.
All right. Let's go back into the Wayback Machine.
Oh, Dave brings back the Wayback Machine. What have you been trolling the old stuff for?
I figure we need some levity in the fucking program.
I'm going to cluck, cluck, cluck it.
Oh, fuck it.
Okay. Patricia Norman, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so I've got a song. This is an old blues song. And it is by a guy named R.L. Burnside. And the song name is Stacko Lee. And this is a very famous blues song. You'll hear it as different names like Stagger Lee. It's all the same song, different versions of the same song.
Really? Who originally wrote it? Is this the original recording? No.
No, it's not. Okay. The original recording for Stagger Lee was by... Stagger Lee Shelton. That's right. Stagger Lee Shelton.
And if I'm reading on the Trinitron right, 1924. Fuck me.
1924 when this song was originally written. Wow. 1924. So we're going into the way fucking back machine. But this is a different version. It's by a guy named R.L. Burnside. Do you remember the Samuel L. Jackson movie Moan?
Yes, Black Snake Moan.
Black Snake Moan.
Okay.
Samuel L. Jackson sings a version of R.L. Burnside's version of Stacko Lee.
Wow.
In the movie.
This song has been done hundreds of times.
Yes. But Samuel L. Jackson, his version of it is a takeoff of R.L. Burnside's version.
Wow, a version of a version. All right, cue that shit up. Bring that beat back.
R.L. Burnside.
I walk through water, and I walk through mud. Came to this place they call the Bucket of Blood. I walked past the man with some meat. He began a dirty glass of water and a tough ass piece of meat. I told him, I said, "Say, man, you don't know who I am." Frankly, my man, I wouldn't give a damn. I told him my name was Stacko Lee, you know. He said, "I heard about you up that way." He said, "But I feed you hungry motherfuckers every day."
Motherfucker right there. Woo!
Time, you know, he's going to rest. I pumped 6 motherfucking rockets in his goddamn chest.
You know? Yeah! 6 motherfucking rockets in his goddamn chest. Yikes. Right there.
That's like the most powerful line that's ever been fucking delivered on this show.
6 motherfucking rockets into his goddamn chest.
Yes. Sweet. Told you it was worth it.
His mother come out behind and come, you know, "I know my son can't be dead." I said, "Just look at that hole in that dirty motherfucker's head." Told me then, said, "Your name, baby, Stacko Lee. You could be Stack, but you better not be here when that bad bit of lawn gets back." Place was crowded, it's keeping up a lot of fuss. By that time, you could hear a pin at the floor. bad bit of lounge just stepped in the door. He walked up to the sort of guy laying behind that dead. So who can this, who got this hole that's dirty the motherfucker's head? Who can his murder be? One motherfucker told me, your brother speaks softly because his name is Stagger Lee. By that time, one of his horses said, Billy, please. By that time, he shot the bitch in both her knees.
All right, okay. That's enough of the blues.
That contained the most powerful lyric ever read, sung on Music to Swear By. What was it, Dave?
It was the reason I decided to play this song. It was, I pump 6 motherfucking rockets into his goddamn chest.
That's sweet.
Yeah. All right, so while we were playing that, I doodled the history behind this song. This stems back to an incident in 1895.
Okay? 1895. Fuck.
1895. And okay. I can even predate that, all right? And this is reported in a story by the St. Louis, Missouri Globe Democrat, which says that William Lyons, age 25, a levee hand, was shot in the abdomen yesterday evening at 10 o'clock in the saloon of Bill Curtis. Blah, blah, blah.
Dock worker.
He was shot by Lee Sheldon, a carriage driver. Lyons and Sheldon were friends and were talking together, blah, 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 were drinking and feeling in exuberant spirits.
They were euphoric.
They were euphoric.
No, drinking and an exuberant, same thing. Bring
euphoric. Euphoric.
All right. The discussion drifted to politics, and then an argument was started, with the conclusion of which was that Lyons snatched Sheldon's hat from his head. The latter indignantly demanded the return. Lyons refused. Sheldon withdrew his revolver and shot him in the abdomen.
Wow.
So that's what some people say that this, and the names are similar.
In 1895, wouldn't it take you like 6 minutes to shoot 6 bullets?
Yeah, good point. You got one shot at a time.
Okay, maybe the fucker was down to the ground and he put another one in, cocked it, you know. What's that thing called where you shove the thing down, you stuff it?
Ramrod.
Yeah, I put the ramrod in, get it ready.
Your black powder pistol.
Take another minute, load the next bullet, shoot him.
Okay, so you think they didn't have revolvers back
I'm guessing
then?
Maybe not.
Okay, who the fuck cares? Because there are others that argue. There is speculation that the name Stago Lee predates even the 1995 incident.
Whoa. Okay.
In that it had gotten its name, let's see. Other sources say that black roustabouts on the Mississippi River docks were called Stacko Lees.
Wow.
Because they would stack cargo on the lee side of the docks, hence the whole name and this and that.
What is the lee side?
Fuck Fano!
Come on, you fucking mariner.
Dude, I live like 8 mariner. Miles from the Mississippi River. I don't fucking know.
Let's say it's the west side.
All right. Anyways, the first published version is in 1910.
Okay.
The first published version.
Well, you're predating 1895 with 1910. I like your logic.
The first published version. Okay. Published. They didn't have magnetic tapes.
Okay.
They didn't have iPods.
iPods, yes. That's
pocket
right.
Computers
pocket computers. High five.
High five.
Anyways, so the first published version comes. So basically, this song has been around since the beginning of fuck who knows when. That's a good song, man.
That's a long time. That's some history behind that song.
The beginning of fuck, who knows when.
Right.
That's the name of the song.
All right.
Stacko Lee.
How did you discover that, David?
I was looking for an Etna James song. A friend of mine had said there's an Etna James song where she says she's in a cock-sucking state of mind.
Ah, ooh, yeah. That would be obscene. Right.
So I was searching for Etna James' cock-sucking state of mind. And I didn't come up with shit. So I started searching for blues and profanity.
Nice.
And it led me to Stacko Lee, R.L. Burnside.
Wow. Same. Okay. R.L. Burnside. When was this recorded again? Like 1950?
We're not sure.
Either way, it was
a long time ago.
And there's a lot of motherfuckers in that. Yes. I mean, a lot of motherfuckers.
He's dirty.
All right, Dave.
You know, I think before we move on to the next song here, you should throw in a little bit of one of the albums that blew me away, 1998. R.L. Burnside partnered with this guy, Tom Rothrock, producer for Beck and Foo Fighters.
Okay.
And they merged kind of that 90s crazy techno type, you know, beat sound with blues and a totally innovative new sound. And I think the most indicative
And this
song,
is, so this, 1998... The same motherfucker was playing this super old blues shit.
Yes.
Like and, in the 50s, and I this, would imagine. Yeah, 50s and, or 60s,
and
right?
And this guy, Tom Rothrock, I think he scratched his head and said, you know what's popular right now? Daft Punk and Chemical Brothers and all that kind of shit and Foo Fighters. Let's get some fucking techno beats combined with blues and see what we can do. And just take, you know, there's no profanity in this kick-ass song, but just play a snippet so people hear it. Because it's cool to think the song we just heard, 40, 50, whatever the fuck years later, he's doing this shit with Tom Rothrock. Well, all right.
There we go.
All right, so here we got a fucking 80-year-old R.L. Burnside.
Yeah,
right
he really is about 80 years old in this. And this song is the only song on the album that they recorded live. But turn this shit up and listen to this fucking shit. Turn your iPods up and crank the headphones shit.
Some groovy shit right there.
Alright. Good call, Paul. Good. Very good.
Thank you.
When the fuck did we start knowing what we were talking about? Seriously, that's fucking brilliant, man. So who was that by right there? That was R.L. Burnside coupled with who?
Tom Rothrock, the producer. So it's, right. But it's R.L. Burnside's album.
Fucking hey, yeah, man. And then people started mining the old blues for whatever funk beat, whatever beats.
What do they say on 30 Rock? I think I heard a poem of four scores and seven beers ago.
All right. Can I play a song from music that I love?
I think
please
you should.
You
I think
tap
you should.
Back to the, like, you know, your favorite songs of all time.
Are you Boy. Are you looking for some more Motley Crue ripoff artists?
Shut up. I want to talk extensively about Social Distortion and the progression of Social Distortion, but let's get to the song first. This is off of Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll, which came out late in the timeline of Social Distortion.
Yep.
This is Don't Take Me for Granted.
I'm your warning leather jacket. I'm the volume in your fucked up teenage band. A pack of smokes and a six pack. I'm the dreams you had walking down railroad tracks, you and me. I'm your boss, taste of romance.
I got nothing to say, I'm just euphoric listening to this shit.
Yeah, no shit.
I love Social D.
Guys like us ain't no chance. But I'm the thing that keeps you and me alive, but not forever. So take me down the road, take me to the show. It's something to believe in, no one else knows. But don't take me for granted.
Yeah.
guys want to hear the history behind this song?
Yep.
All right, so Social Distortion, literally dozens of members. The only consistent member, the only person that has been in Social Distortion for the entire 33 years of the band.
33 years?
33 fucking years. 1978, they put this band together. Yep.
That's insane.
It's insane. The only consistent member has been Mike Ness, the lead guy. Yep. But the other member who was there until 2000 was Dennis Dinnell, who played bass and drums here and there, and guitar. He switched all around. He died of a brain aneurysm in 2000.
Ugh.
This song was written, like, they started, Mike started work on this album after Dennis died. And he didn't finish the album until 3 years later, but this song specifically is about Dennis and him being the inspiration that kept Mike going throughout the years.
So why'd he call it Don't Take Me For Granted?
Don't know.
Right.
Because apparently, if you Google, there's a YouTube clip about this where he talks in concert about it. Like, people you love, then you never know when they're going to fucking disappear out of your life.
Wow, he got serious, huh?
So, that's kind of sad a little bit. That's
it
pretty
is,
sad.
But okay, that right there, Social Distortion, again, epitomizes the 1-2 fuck you beat of real rock and roll in my mind.
Yes.
But yeah, Social Distortion, I like them because they've gone through the progression. Those fuckers, like we said during the song, they fucking started out in 78. Wow. And they're part of the influenced by, you know, British punk rock. They're an LA band, so they go a little more hardcore. They release Mommy's Little Monster.
No, that's what I'm trying to figure out. When was their first album?
Their first album was in 1983, Little Monster.
All right, that was Mommy's. Okay.
Yep. And it's, you know, and at this point, LA punk has gone mainstream. Yeah. Black Flag is touring the country mad, blah, blah, blah. But in 83, this comes out. Then in like 1985, Mike Ness goes to prison for heroin and stealing cars.
Nice.
So Mike Ness, they had to put the band on hiatus for like 2.5 years because he was completely into heroin and in prison and off and on. So then he gets out of prison. And in 1988, they put out this Prison Bound in which the term is coined cowpunk because he goes back to his roots, which are fucking... like Johnny Cash, Old Country, and the Rolling Stones shit.
Yep.
And
so you create your own genre. That's pretty fucking impressive.
Yeah, so they created his own genre.
Secrete your own genre?
Exactly.
I hate that album. I really do. Prison Bound, I do not like. But like most people...
I like the next one.
Paul, where do you come in?
1990. 1990, Social Distortion, self-titled album, Social Distortion.
Ball and Chain.
Yes.
Story of My
Ring
Life.
Ring of Fire, the Johnny Cash cover.
Fucking A, so that's awesome.
I grew up in gay-ass Connecticut in the middle of nowhere. Well, I grew up in the middle of somewhere, but listening to classic rock, and I didn't fucking know about the shit that was going on in L.A. in the mid-80s. So when I finally found this shit in Boston at some record shop, this blew my mind.
Yeah.
And this is still one of my favorite albums of all
time.
It
is. It's one of the must-own. Yeah. It's not my favorite Social Distortion, but for any musical taste, that album will please, that'll tickle your fancy to no 21 end.
21 years old.
So they follow that up with a release in 1992, which is Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell, which is a little more rocky, but it's not, whatever. It's whatever.
Yep, but they were touring big time at that point.
True, they've never stopped touring,
right,
but
they were huge.
You come to, and this is where I get serious, 1996, White Light, White Heat, White Trash.
Yep.
That is a must own. They fucking amp it up to the next degree, and they don't stop to this day. At like in 1996, they kicked it up to a level of rock and roll.
Yeah,
they dropped all the cowpunk and all this, and they go to straight 1-2 fuck you rock and roll. Every album after that is ownable. And what they've got, the reason I brought that is because they have, what is it, Hard Times and Nursery Rhymes, that was released last fucking week. All right.
Wow.
So, and I don't own it yet. I need to know. My credit card got canceled on iTunes and expired, so I wasn't able to purchase it for tonight. So, Social Distortion, fucking A. Social Distortion and the Super Suckers. always battle for top band That's of all shit? Time in my mind.
Nice.
All right, yep. Where do we go from here?
Well, maybe we'll kind of change things up a little bit.
We got to wrap this shit up, yeah, too. So do you got a good going out song?
Yeah, why don't we put all the little kids to sleep right now? Put a nice little ditty. That'll kind of mellow them out.
Whippersnappers, here we go.
Yeah, this is a little tune by Ben Folds 5.
Oh, wait a minute.
Who's Ben Folds 5?
Is Ben... No. Who the fuck doesn't know? Isn't Ben Folds 5 like a fucking easy, you know, dental office music shit?
No.
They're credible?
Yeah.
He's credible?
See, I don't know. That's a debate worth not having right now.
Okay.
But I like Ben Folds, and when Ben Folds 5 came out with the first album, I think 1995, I thought it was cool as shit. They don't... Piano. He's a piano player.
Okay.
And he had a bass, drums, and piano, no guitar. And he's a great singer, great piano player. And I think he's gotten silly as time's gone by. And I don't really know if he's regarded as a credible musician anymore. But here's an example of a song that he performed that I think you might recall from back in the day.
Something's burning.
Dude, this song is euphoric.
Oh.
Don't you think it's euphoric?
Does it make you feel euphoric, Tony?
It's euphoric, bitch.
Yeah, definitely.
Exuberant? What was that?
No, no, it's euphoric.
Drunk and exuberance?
No.
I would use no word other than euphoric.
You got it?
What are you guys trying to bait me into it? I'm on to you now.
Finally! But this is right over the best part of the song, like right in the beginning when it catches off guard. Fuck. Alright, so we'll use whatever he just said there. Play it again.
Should I start it over?
Yeah, I want to hear it again.
It's a euphoric song. You know that?
I'm euphoric.
Fine, it's fucking euphoric. I don't care.
Shut up and listen to the song.
Bitches ain't shit. Bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks. Lick on these nuts and suck the dick. Just get the fuck out after you're done. And I hops in my ride to make a quick run. I used to know a bitch named Eric Wright. We used to roll around and fuck the hoes at night. Tighter than a motherfucking gangster beats. And we was balling on the motherfucking Compton streets. Peep, that shit got deep and it was on.
Wait a minute, this doesn't strike me as normal Ben Fold repertoire. Is this a cover?
Yes, I think an obscure band, maybe Dr. Something.
Okay, Dr. Something.
Dr. Pepper.
She got mad enough. And now she's suing cause the shit she be doing ain't. Conversation for your ass. I once had a bitch named Mandy May. I used to be up in them guts like every day. The pussy was the bomb, had a nigga on sprung. I wasn't numb like a motherfucker licking the proton. The homies used to tell me that she wasn't no good, but I'm the maniac in blackness, the Snoopy's word. So I figured niggas wouldn't trip with mine. Guess what got gaffled by one time. I'm back in the motherfucking county jail. 6 months on my chest, now it's time to bail. I gets released on a hot sunny day. My nigga DOC and my homie Dr. Dre. Scooped in a coupe, Snoop, we got the news. Your girl was tricking while you was drinking the county.
All right, I'm liking this vibe for all taking right. This podcast the fuck
sweet,
out.
Sweet, sweet.
You know what? I think I might just like Dr. Ben Folds Dre. All right, thank you everybody for listening to this shitty podcast. 2011 is the year we break it. So until next time, pardon the profanity.
Yeah, later. Tell your uncle about the show.
And get fucked.
I'm heartbroken, but I'm still loved.
Man, fuck that bitch.
3, 4. Bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks. Lick on these nuts and suck a dick. Get the fuck out.
For you, Donnie. I love you too.
Well, we can edit Donnie the fuck out, basically.